Benedetta, and I work with SAMHSA, which is within the Department of Health and Human Services. SAMHSA is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. And I just want to ask you to bear with me a little bit. I just returned last night from 2 weeks in Bombay, Calcutta, and Paris. So I am in a variety of different time zones and a little out of it. So if I say something strange, just chalk it up to travel fatigue. I was supposed to be co-presenting with my supervisor, Dr. Lark Huang, who's our director of our Office of Behavioral Health Equity. But Lark has been asked to attend another session here for our administrator. So I'm just going to go solo. I just want to ask really quickly, how many people have heard of SAMHSA or are familiar with, oh, wow, that is awesome. I don't think I've ever seen that happen in a room before. Okay, so I don't need to go over the nitty-gritty about what we do within SAMHSA. This is just a brief slide talking about our vision. The mission of SAMHSA is really to reduce the impact of substance abuse and mental illness on the on our communities across the United States. So what do we know? So this session is about some of the work we're doing at SAMHSA around addressing health disparities. So we know that people of color, and I think Dr. Bullock's presentation just touched a little bit at a lot of the kind of baggage around different terminology, so I just want to ask for your forgiveness if some of the terminology that I've included in these slides is not what you feel comfortable with or what you use in your professional or personal life. That could be a whole other conversation about how do we refer to different populations. But just for the sake of this slide presentation, just accept what I've included here. So we know that people of color represent about one-third of the total U.S. population. More than 50% of those who are uninsured have worse access to health care, receive lower quality care when they do have access, and experience generally worse health outcomes than our quote-unquote non-Hispanic white population. I also just want, as an aside, want to say that the work that we do at SAMHSA around health disparities also is inclusive of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender populations, but a lot of the data I'm going to be showing you today is really focused on the racial, ethnic populations that we're working with. So this is just a few snapshot slides of some of the work that ARC has done, which is the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. And if you really focus on the green sections on these slides, you can see that across quality of care, access to care, there's certainly improvements happening, but we see that there's a lot of worsening outcomes across quality of care, access to care, particularly for populations like American Indian, Alaska Natives, and these are all being as a comparison to white populations. Again, that could be controversial. Who do you compare different populations to? But the ARC study was done in comparison to white populations. Here, again, we see that in 2009, their study, that if we look at quality of care, looking at if it's better, same, or worse, quality of care and access to care, you can see how it falls out across different populations. Probably not very surprising, but most dramatic is looking at poor versus high income. And if we think about diverse populations, oftentimes, unfortunately, a lot of populations of color do fall within the poor designation, so to speak. So just a little bit of data. I have a lot of slides here with data on health disparities work, but I'm not on health disparities rather. I'm not going to go into a huge amount of detail, but you'll have these. I believe everyone has access to the slides. So if we look at suicide rates across different populations, we see that unfortunately Native Americans have an amazing spike of suicide rates from younger populations up until about 40 to 44. If you look at across race, ethnicity, and gender, we see, again, that for males, American Indian, Alaska Natives, their suicide rates are obscenely high. If we look at suicidal-related behaviors, so suicidal ideation, Latina girls have a really high level compared to a number of different populations. If you look at they felt sad or hopeless, you see that the rates are much, much higher for Latina females, than for other populations. Illicit substance use initiation by different race and ethnicity groups. Again, some of this is there's not much granularity of the data, but it gives you a kind of ballpark picture of what we're trying to address at SAMHSA. This is looking at across different age groups of different populations, who has the highest rates of, or who has what rates of illicit substance use initiation. So I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on these. I apologize. But again, this is all helpful if you have to write a paper or something. You have these slides. This is some information that SAMHSA collects. We have the National Household Survey Report that we do every year. Looking at alcohol dependence or abuse, again, much higher for American Indian and Native Alaskan populations. And I will say that all of these racial ethnic groups, when you break them out into the higher level of granularity in the data, you see a very different picture. So here we see that Asians have a very low alcohol dependence abuse from the ages of 12. But if you break it out, you actually see that Laotian, Cambodian populations have incredibly high rates of use. And so the whole story is not being told here, so I just want to, that's a small caveat, but mental health service use rate, we see that it's much lower for Black and white populations, non-Hispanic. Methamphetamine use, incredibly high comparison to other groups for Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders. At SAMHSA, in our studies, we do break out according to, we do have a designation for two or more races. Unfortunately, we do not break it out according to what the two or more races is comprised of, per what Dr. Bullock had mentioned. But we see, unfortunately, in a lot of our data that the two or more race designation has some of the highest rates of substance use and behavioral health issues in general. So that was just a brief snapshot of kind of, you know, why should we care? Like, we all know that there's health disparities, particularly this is just to give you a little bit of a sense of the particular impact that behavioral health has in the health disparities world. So what else do we know? We know that oftentimes the service providers out there, whether it's in behavioral health or general health care, they're not specifically trained to work with people from diverse backgrounds. Often we also know that the evidence-based practices that are out there, the evidence base that they're predicated on is not representative of a population of color. It's usually on a general kind of heterogeneous population, and so it might work for a general population, but if you take a study that has a quote-unquote evidence base and try to apply it to, let's say, a Hmong population in Lowell, Massachusetts, it's not going to work the same as for a Caucasian population in Columbus, Ohio. And lastly, we know that communities, because of this lack of practice that's developed for their for diverse populations, communities are then forced to develop their own practices that really meet their own needs. Just speaking to the behavioral health workforce, this is a comparison of the psychiatrists in California versus the population of California. And we see that, in particular, we know that California has a really high Hispanic-Latino population, but if you look at the blue, we see that there's a pretty low percentage of psychiatrists. And this is same type of information is available across any state that you look at. Traditionally, the populations that we have the highest rates of that have the highest rates of diversity have the lowest rates of specialty health providers. That's a problem that needs to be addressed. So why should we care? Again, this is probably belaboring the point. This room wouldn't be so full if people didn't already know why we should care. But we know that the burden of disease is a lot higher for diverse populations. We know that this has a human cost, but also a fiscal cost, and that's obviously been a really big issue in the past couple of years. We look at healthcare reform, you know, all we've been talking about is cost containment, and so if there's a way to rein in some of the costs that are associated with healthcare for diverse populations, that might be a strategy in moving forward. Then we know that the cost of racial and ethnic disparities, according to the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, was about $1.24 trillion between 2003 and 2006. So that's an important thing to remember when we're talking about healthcare reform and trying to save money in our healthcare system. So the Office of Behavioral Health Equity is an office within SAMHSA that's pretty new, and one of our former team members, Amanda Nugent, is here. She was actually one of our one of the people that helped launch our office, so it's really nice to see Amanda here. This Office of Behavioral Health Equity was developed at SAMHSA through it was required through the Affordable Care Act. There were six offices through the Department of Health and Human Services that were required to be developed, so FDA, ARC, SAMHSA, CDC, a variety of other federal agencies were required to have an Office of Minority Health, is what they called it. SAMHSA, we decided to reference ours as an Office of Behavioral Health Equity because some populations, like LGBT populations, don't identify themselves as a minority per se, and we want to be all-inclusive of individuals who are impacted by behavioral health issues. Oh my goodness, 5 minutes left. Okay, so the vision, mission, I'm not gonna go into that in too much detail, but OB, which we call short for Office of Behavioral Health Equity, We have five main functions, and I'm going to focus on function number five, which is quality practice and workforce development. Now, one of our main efforts through OB that's impacting quality and workforce is the NED, which is the National Network to Eliminate Disparities in Behavioral Health, NED for the short. And the NED has over now about 1,200 members that are part of it, and it's really focused on community providers that are working with diverse populations around behavioral health issues. And that, so this is our website, nned.net, and I encourage all of you to go visit this website. It's a great resource. We update it constantly. And really the focus of this, you can see, we just started this a couple years ago. We started with just 35 affiliates, and now we have over 700 affiliates. We have close to 1,200 total members. And the NED, the focus of this was really to try to bring together providers who are serving diverse populations across the country, because they're all doing things on their own. So I referenced before Hmong population in Lowell, Massachusetts. So if there's a behavioral health provider working with those populations in Massachusetts, they might just be trying to figure out on their own what works for that population. But they don't know that in Fremont, California, there's a really large Hmong population, and that they might be able to actually work with that provider to understand what they're doing, what are some promising practices that that provider is using. So it was really, the emphasis is to connect what we viewed as these pockets of excellence across the country of work that were addressing health disparities for diverse populations in a way that the federal government would never be able to do. And we really felt like a lot of the work and the knowledge was coming up from the community level, and we wanted to connect those providers with each other and then also be able to understand what work they were doing and use that at the federal level. So as opposed to the federal government trying to come in and say, this is how you should do work, this is how you should provide care, we wanted to learn from those providers. So the purpose, again, was to build this national network of diverse racial, ethnic, cultural, and sexual minority communities and organizations to promote practices that ultimately will eliminate behavioral health disparities. There's a number of desired outcomes. We want to link these providers, identify these pockets of excellence, and build capacity amongst the providers. We have a number of key operations, but the big emphasis is really how do we connect these providers together and how do we build capacity for the providers that are part of the NED. So this is kind of our structure. We have, and I should say that this top orange circle should be the biggest, because that's really the emphasis behind the NED, is how do we support communities. We have community providers. We have these knowledge discovery and diffusion centers, which are really research organizations, and then we have a national facilitation center which coordinates everybody. Thank you. So just this is again our growth over the past couple years. You can see where our members have, and all of our members are geomapped on our website, so that you can go here. You can see you can hover over any of the little circles and find out who is the provider. You can do a search according to different languages spoken, different racial, ethnic groups, LGBT populations, and find where different providers are. And we have their contact information. You can get in touch with them. And this is all user-generated information that we have permission to share. So we have a number of, we have forum calls that are presentations that we do that are webinars about different topics, and all these are drawn from our community providers. What are their areas of interest? Trauma is a really big issue, so we have a number of webinars we've done recently on trauma. We have learning clusters where we bring together the providers. We bring together anywhere from 10 to 30 providers to meet once. They discuss the type of work they're doing around a specific topic, and then we keep them convened over the course of a year virtually to develop some sort of product. And that's been a really fascinating and really crucial mechanism for connecting some of these providers in a face-to-face way that sometimes is more valuable than just trying to find someone on a website. Communities of practice are practices that we have pulled from our provider network, and then we are developing them into an online training so that in 8 to 10 weeks, providers can learn a certain promising practice. And these are the ones that we've done so far: Bienvenido, Project Youth Ventures for Tribal Youth, Latino Multifamily Group Treatment. And this is, again, we know that a lot of community providers, they don't have the resources to go fly somewhere and do a two-day training and take time off from work. So we're taking promising practices or evidence-based practices that work for diverse groups and developing them into online trainings that people can access in a much easier way. We also have a conference annually. Our first one was 2011, and that was bringing providers together around these different trainings for 2 days. and then we're going to do another one in 2012. So these are kind of our next steps. Our Net Innovations Collaboratory, we're going to be actually identifying innovations that different providers are using in their day-to-day work, and then creating a search mechanism so that people could find the different practices that people are using. We're planning for our next NEDLEARN 2012, which again is a training opportunity for providers. We're moving away from the learning communities, which are those face-to-face interactions in favor of the communities of practice, because workforce development is such a big issue now. So I would encourage all of you to join the NED, nned.net. It's free. There's a lot of resources. Our most visited section is the grant opportunities. So we have both federal and non-federal grant opportunities that are community-focused, so not for states and not for big organizations, but really for community providers. Okay, thank you.